There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Benched with Bubba. Before we get started with episode 121, got a couple things to talk to you about. One of them is to help you with your NFL DFS. After you listen to the 2-Point Conversion NFL DFS podcast, check out thequantedge.com. Are you tired of getting crushed by the pros? DFS players, sports bettors, listen up. Thequantedge.com has the tools you need to play like a pro. With our lineup optimizer, injury tool, wide receiver cornerback matchups, and head-to-head tools, you'll be armed with everything you need to win. Make up to 150 lineups in seconds. See matchups to exploit and compare players to help you make the right decisions that you are on the fence about with thequantedge.com. You get exclusive access to industry experts, articles, podcasts, and the TQE community by participating in the premium membership chat. We at Benched with Bubba have a special deal for our loyal listeners. Using promo code BENCHED, B-E-N-C-H-E-D, you'll get $10 off your first month at thequantedge.com. That's BENCHED, B-E-N-C-H-E-D, for $10 off your first month at thequantedge.com. So go to thequantedge.com and sign up today with promo code BENCHED, B-E-N-C-H-E-D. Also, I want to talk to you guys about Draft. Great way to play fantasy sports. It's draft.com, draft in your app store. Snake-style drafts just the way you like them. They got football cracking on the weekends, many different slates. You got baseball, you're going to have hockey, basketball, golf, all of the fun stuff you're looking for. Drafts take less than 5 minutes. You get paid out the next day. And then when you use promo code SDSports at checkout, you'll get entry into a free $3 tournament of your choice. So go check them out, draft.com, draft in your app store, promo code SDSports when you check out for free entry into a $3 tournament. Now, to this week's edition of Benched with Bubba, episode 121, joined by Ryan Bloomfield of Baseball HQ. We're going to recap the RotoWire Dynasty Invitational, talk some hot players, are they just September flukes or not, and give a little dip into the two early mock drafts that we have just kicked off thanks to Justin Mason. So check it out, Benched with Bubba, episode 121. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 121. Going to talk some fantasy baseball. In order to do so, have a guest we've had on before, a recurring guest, one may say. You can find him on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, man?
I'm doing great, Bubba. We got, 2 weeks left, so it's time to grind it out.
Yeah, most people have probably thrown in the towel. There's still some going hard and going at it. And I play DFS a lot, so I love it because I'm getting a lot of guys to look forward to for next year. So that's kind of what we'll talk about a little bit tonight. And then we have our two early mocks that we're in, which is pretty fun. And before I even get into it, I could save this for later, but did you do the two early mocks last year as well?
I did. Okay. I should probably look back and see who I took, and it's fun because there's just nothing to go off of. Like, I haven't done 2019 rankings. There's no ADP. Like, it's a completely blind way to do it. It'd be cool to check that out, what I did last year. I didn't know if you were in it or not.
Yeah, I was. And that's why it's a good point you mentioned. Maybe we'll have a good old Smata, as we'll talk about him a little later, get his charts going on that and figure out he's a maniac with that stuff. But we'll get him on that. And then that's a shout out to Justin Mason as well, as that's one of his little pet projects. But before we do that, let's talk about some players. We've got a couple offensive players, a couple pitchers to talk about. Ryan O'Hearn. The Royals are actually kind of fun to watch right now. They're calling up some guys that are balling out, and Ryan O'Hearn is one of them. He's batting, you know, fourth or fifth in the lineup, left-handed bat, some decent pop. Is this kind of a, you know, the future first baseman for the Royals, or is this kind of a just a Timber Call-up deal?
Yeah, it's kind of funny you say that, because I really, honestly, haven't seen much of O'Hearn, haven't watched the Royals of late, and I probably should. Like, they're way out of it, but they've got a lot of excitement going on with Merrifield, Mondesi, O'Hearn. It's actually a pretty exciting group. In general, though, on O'Hearn, I'm not the biggest fan. I've got to lean more on our prospect guys over at HQ. They gave him, for those that are familiar with HQ's prospect ratings, they gave him a 7C prospect rating, which is pretty much a 50% chance to be an everyday guy. The power has been impressive. It's been a small sample, but the minor league power has been good, but not great. You know, O'Hearn hit 11 homers in 100 games in the PCL this year. He hit 22 homers last year. So, you know, that's not bad, but certainly not, you know, what he's been showing in the majors. Got some contact issues. We've got his minor league equivalents down to like a 220, 240 batting average. Can't really hit lefties. So, you know, it's a big leap of faith to buy in on somebody with that small of an MLB look. I think pitchers are going to adjust to O'Hearn. He's really in a tough park for lefty power. We'll see how that lineup looks next year, but yeah, I'm not really buying in on O'Hearn. It's a great story. It's a great small sample story, but I'm not going to reach for him in drafts next year.
No, I like that. That's kind of the point right now. Is some of these guys are they just September's, you know, darlings, or do they actually have a future? And I never heard of them until about 3 weeks ago. I had no clue who the guy was. Yep. And I don't like digging deep on prospects, but I kind of have a rough idea on most teams' kind of top, you know, handful of prospects. This guy wasn't on the radar at all, so it really, really surprised me.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point about just September in general. Like, we don't know, you know, the pitchers that are, you know, that are facing aren't. Sometimes, depending on the schedule, those aren't playoff teams. You should have seen the Cleveland lineup today, the day after they won the AL Central. It was definitely the hangover lineup with Donaldson in there. But yeah, all these September performances, you got to take with that grain of salt.
Yeah, we're seeing more teams use the opener now. You're seeing, you know, guys that are probably eighth or ninth guys in a rotation coming in. There's all kinds of different things happening with these expanded rosters. And a team like the Royals and these other teams that need to see what they have for the future, you're going to see a lot of interesting scenarios there. Let's talk Alberto Mondesi. This guy might not be a September guy, because this guy's getting a lot of buzz around the industry. He's had a really, really good second half on the season. He has 24 stolen bases, and he's got some pop. He went deep again on Sunday. Many were kind of writing him off early in the season, thinking, you know, we drafted him late for stolen bases. He wasn't doing anything. Now he's just raking. What's your thoughts on Mondesi?
Yeah, really has not done anything until the second half. You know, in the minors, he, you know, kind of teased us a couple times, winning starting gigs in Kansas City and then not following through with it. And wow, yeah, 9 home runs now with the bomb today, 24 steals, hitting over 280. It's an impressive profile, honestly. It's also a risky profile. I'm going to be really interested to see. I don't think the two early mocks are deep enough. I think ours is like in the fifth round to where Mondesi is being taken yet. Just a fascinating case. I think of Mondesi as having like a Trey Turner ceiling, but a Keon Broxton floor. The plate skills are Broxton-esque. I guess he makes a little bit more contact than Keon Broxton does, but there's no patience at the plate. That's going to drive a lot of folks away from Mondesi. It's going to cut into his OBP, his stolen base opportunities. But I mean, he runs every chance he gets. And Kansas City has said his lighter's greener than green, at least in the second half of this season. And that's playing out with those steals. So, you know, don't want to prorate what he's done this year over a full season. But he's got 50 stolen bases in those legs if he can get on base enough and get that green light. I mentioned the plate skills. The thing that's been impressive has been the pop, as you mentioned, Bob. A 42% hard contact or hard hit rate this year. The strikeout rate hasn't been horrible, So it's an impressive profile. It all depends on the price. If I had to guess, he'd probably be right on the fringe of a top 100 pick next year. It all depends how much risk you want to take on and really how you've constructed your team through those first six-ish rounds. If you really need steals in an environment where steals are scarce, Montesi could make a huge impact. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, looking at Shimada's ADP through all the mock drafts so far, he's gone through about 57 picks, and there's no Mondesi yet. So 12-team league, we're almost through five rounds in theory, so he's not there yet. It'll be interesting, though, because like you said, the Trey Turner ceiling, well, Trey Turner's going in the first round of a lot of drafts. You got his teammate, Whit Merrifield, who is running like crazy. And, you know, going into this season, you've heard it all the time, there were a lot of people who had nothing to do with Whit Merrifield. And sure, the power declined. You could say, okay, that's what we expected. But the stolen bases are legit. They are right there. He's scoring runs. He's getting on base. He's doing what this year is what he's doing, I think, is a more consistent reality of Whit Merrifield, what we've seen with his hit tools and whatnot. It could be interesting with those two at the top of that order.
Yeah, it's funny with Merrifield, and I tweeted this out the other day, the total narrative in the industry, myself included, was Whit Merrifield's going to regress. That's a given. What's he going to regress to? He's actually gotten better, hitting over 300, more steals. I mean, I don't want to compare Mondesi to Merrifield. I like Merrifield a lot more. He's got the better play skills, a lot more contact. But it's an interesting top of the lineup they might have over there.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really interesting. Mondesi, like you were already saying, really only second half. Even in the minors, he kind of just teased us. He really never dominated the way we'd want him to. I'm pulling up another player, and George Bissell, who we all know, told me I was crazy for this comparison. But then there's another guy, Walter McMichael, and some others that have said, okay, I can see where your head's at in this scenario. Like, they at least give it the time of day. Now, Mondesi, like you said, he's going to be maybe a top 100 guy because the hype train is real. Like, it's going right now. A guy that people just continue to just dog on and dog on and dog on is Jose Peraza. And I know Peraza's been bad, but hear me out. He's hit 294 in the second half. He hit 293 in the first half. So he's obviously hitting well for the season. He has 23 stolen bases on the year, 12 home runs, and you could probably get him at the very end of your draft. Does that appeal to you more than Mondesi, or am I just shooting at something crazy? Because I'll be totally honest with me. Am I crazy?
I like Peraza actually a little bit more than Mondesi. I like the floor higher. I mean, Peraza makes a ton of contact. Like, I think he's a legit 280, 290 hitter. He's hitting 294 this year, a 26% line drive rate, 88% contact rate. I mean, that's actually pretty elite. He doesn't walk much. I don't believe in like the 20 homer power. I think Mondesi has. I think Mondesi has the higher kind of stolen base ceiling, but Peraza could swipe 30 plus bags, score a bunch of runs, and I think that batting average floor is pretty high. So that's I'd actually take Peraza over Mondesi right now.
I love it. Too bad I said that now, because you'll probably take him in the mock draft for me. But that's one thing I've been looking at him and looking at him going, the value wise, production wise, go get your homer somewhere else if that's what you need. But I'll take the Peraza side.
Yeah. And I just wish Peraza would run a little bit more. He doesn't get like the complete freedom on the base pass that Mondesi gets. But yeah, those skills are much higher floor.
And I think as the Reds continue their redevelopment and eventually kind of Joey Votto gets out of the way a little bit, I think you might see Peraza running a little bit more in that lineup. That's just a hunch, but you never know. Usually younger teams tend to head that way, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Jeff McNeil of the Mets. This is a guy, another prospect. He was on the MLB Pipeline Prospects of the Year teams. He really kind of, he was good, but really jumped on the scene this year. He's having a great time with the Mets, one would say. And in the second half, it's only 229, but you look at September's slow, but August he was very, very good. July he was good. Overall, hitting well with a little bit more power than you expect. What's your thoughts on a Jeff McNeil going forward?
I'm a little skeptical on McNeil. The story's been great. The breakout, like you said, really he came out of nowhere. Really wasn't that great in the minors until this year. Looked really good in AAA, and then obviously he's hitting, over 330 with the Mets. Right now. So I see with McNeil, I see kind of an empty batting average. I like the contact that he's making, 90% contact rate through 175 at bats. He's hitting 343. beg your pardon. That's impressive. But I don't see the quality of contact isn't there for me. He's got a 33% hard hit rate. So I don't see a whole lot of power. Used to have some speed game, but hasn't stolen 10 plus bags since 2015. So I don't know. Not very sexy guy. I'd liken him to, since you're a Giants fan, Bubba, I'd throw like a Joe Panic comp on him back when Joe Panic was decent.
that tempers expectations quite a bit.
I could see a plus batting average. I don't see the counting stats, honestly. So I don't see the speed or the power right now.
Okay, that's fair, because he's a guy I've asked a few guests recently about him, because unless you're the deepest of the deepest, like we said, in the prospect world, he's kind of surprising a lot of people this year.
So. He is. And again, that's a good Joe Panic. It's like a 300 Joe Panic, but with
Joe Panic was an all-star at one time. He was an all-star at one time, so I remember that.
Not this year, but.
No. There's a lot of things that didn't go right in San Francisco this year. But, that's a whole other podcast that involves a few adult beverages and whatnot.
Yeah, get a couple beers in you and let you go for an hour with that.
Yeah, I can have a lot of fun with that one because there's a lot of things I do differently, but I don't get paid to do that. Let's talk about a couple of pitchers now. When we talked about some, you know, there's some darlings that jumped up the draft boards last year. Luis Castillo maybe was the most movable pitcher we saw out there. He just skyrocketed up. Everybody loved him. And for valid reasons, everything we saw in a given small sample was very, very good. There was a lot to like. It didn't start the year that way. But what we have seen in the last – since the All-Star break even has been outstanding. A lot more of the Luis Castillo we've grown to love. What are your thoughts on Luis Castillo going forward? Are we finally buying in on Luis Castillo?
I mean, I bought in a few times, especially early in the 2018 draft season before his price went kind of insane. I think he ended up a top 100 pick, like 92 ADP, which is more than the innings that he threw last year. But he's reeling us back in, man. It's unbelievable the transformation that he's made from the first half to second half. He's been like a completely different pitcher. More strikeouts, more whiffs. For me, the velocity has been crazy. The velocity was up 97 last year and made some headlines at the beginning of 2018. Was down to 95, 96. Still good, but not what it was. Since August, he's back up to 97 miles an hour. He's pairing that with more first pitch strikes, which is a metric that I look at all the time when evaluating starters. Getting 0-1 really correlates to a good walk rate, which he's had in the second half. Really, he's had an elite, like 1.5 walks per nine. I know he pitched today. I don't know what the final line was, but things are looking really good for Castillo in the second half. A major pitch mix change has kind of driven some of those skill performances. So he's throwing a lot more sinkers. He's kind of ditched the four seam fastball and throwing a lot more sliders, which he's getting quite a bit more swing and miss on. So what do we do with Castillo next year? I mean, he was horrible in the first half. I mean, really a negative to your lineup. He had an ERA of 5.85 through his first 17 starts, and it's down to 3.09. I think his ADP is going to drop a little bit, but if he's available around 150, I don't know if he will be for me next year. So that'd be like the ninth, 10th round, like an SP3, I'd take him. He'll probably go higher than that given the finish, though. I think there's a lot of people who really like Castillo and probably deservedly so. The second half version of him is pretty good.
Yeah, I don't think he'll fall that far. I'd love him to fall that far. I agree. You kind of have to go in there thinking SP3 to kind of temper your expectations, unless you're one of those guys that shoots for the moon, which, you know, if that's what you want to do, say in an FBC and you want to win it all, then you go for that kind of stuff. Today against Chicago, he picked up the W, 6 2/3, 4 hits, 1 earned, only 2 strikeouts to go with 4 walks, but still pretty darn outstanding. 55% ground ball rate against the Cubbies. Not bad at all. So obviously looking good. I wish the strikeouts were higher, but yeah. I guess we'll work on one thing at a time with Luis Castillo.
Yeah. Yep.
Let's talk about another one. This guy completely confuses me. I mentioned him to a bunch of people through the show and other just talking on Twitter. Shane Bieber, you look at all peripherals, and he was a pitch-to-contact guy for the most part in the minors, not a bunch of strikeouts, doesn't overwhelm you, very good control, work in the corners, that kind of stuff. he's come up with the Indians, and outside of getting kind of beat up today, has been really, really good the second go-around with them. What do you see with Shane Bieber?
Yeah, he's been a confusing one for sure. You mentioned the control, the location. Yeah, it's been great for him. 1.7 walks per nine before today's start. But yeah, the really baffling thing was he was a pitch to contact guy. He's got more strikeouts than innings right now, and he's got a 12% whiff rate, which is really good. That supports a plus strikeout rate over really a 98 innings in the majors. I mean, that's not a small sample anymore. That's half a season, maybe a little bit more. So on the surface, he's got like a 4.32 ERA, went up a little bit today, but I like the peripherals a lot more than that. We've got at HQ, we've got like a 3.50 expected ERA. On the Biebs, he's 23 years old, so there's room for growth. You can't, you know, just kind of pencil him in as a pitch to contact guy this early in his career, so these guys can change. The slider looks really good, and I think if he continues to refine that, continues to get whiffs, he's going to be a decent option in the back end of your rotation in 2019, and he's going to have a spot in the rotation as well.
Yeah, he'll definitely have a spot. He could be a good, you know, around, let's say, 13th, 14th, maybe 15th type guy, your, you know, fifth, sixth starter, maybe. Yep. If he falls that far, be a good little option for you.
Yeah, another thing with Bieber too, and I'm starting to use this a little bit more when I'm analyzing guys, just look at the team that he's on. I mean, Cleveland, Cleveland's done a really good job with their starting rotation, just turning guys around. You know, obviously Kluber's been there a while, but they turned him around. Bauer's had a major turnaround this year. So that pitching staff knows what they're doing. The coaching staff knows what they're doing. That's, you know, another little benefit to Bieber for next year.
Oh, no doubt about it. And another part, just, you know, the team he's on helps because he's in a horrific division that is going to be bad for a long time. The Twins, the Tigers, the White Sox. It's not pretty. It's not pretty at all.
It's almost like he's a National League pitcher with the DH, but
Yeah, so that's definitely a good point there. One last pitcher I want to talk about, and this name has been mentioned everywhere, and just sitting here thinking about it now, he might be the 2019 draft version of Luis Castillo, the way that Helium's just going to keep going with Herman Marquez, the way he's, you know, first off, you don't take a Coors pitcher, and now all of them are pretty much pitching really well at home. But Marquez just looks phenomenal. Road, home, doesn't matter. Wasn't lights out Saturday night in San Francisco, which is very, very surprising. But overall in the season, he's been great. Second half's been phenomenal. Where do you see a guy like Herman Marquez going next year? Because everything we're seeing, he's another one of those younger arms that keeps developing. Kind of like you said with Bieber, this kid looks really, really good.
He looks amazing. I've seen a few of his starts. I watched a bunch of, you know, that the whole race in the NLS has been spectacular to watch, except for the Giants. Sorry, man.
From afar, it's been great.
Yeah, at least you're not a Padres fan.
We get to see all of them come into town and hopefully, you know, spoil a little fun.
Yeah. But yeah, what Marquez is doing is insane. He's really been a top 10 pitcher above the surface, below the surface in the second half. I picked him up in a few leagues around the All-Star break and reaping the rewards in a couple of leagues there. Major slider uptick in the second half. He's throwing 25% sliders since August. That's been a knockout pitch for Marquez. 21% swinging strike rate on his slider, 57% ground ball, and a 41% chase rate. I mean, though, that's exactly what you want. Whiffs and ground balls, especially in Coors Field, with a pitch that you're developing and starting to use more. So that's a really good kind of tangible change that's driving some skill growth for Marquez. Bubba, you mentioned, though, you know, the home road really hasn't mattered lately. His last three games at Coors, 31 strikeouts and 3 walks. I mean, that's crazy. He's young. You know, the thing with Marquez is just, you know, when was the last time we've had a pitcher in Colorado sustainably hold success over a year, 2 years? It you know, few and far between, if any.
It's risky.
I think, yeah, it is. And it's, you know, do you take a half season of what he's done, which has been really good, and expect that to kind of continue in Coors Field next year? It's a tough ask, even if you're a really good pitcher. I'm probably laying off him for that reason. But did you hear an alarm go off?
Yeah, you must be on the clock.
I am on the clock in the too early mock.
Nice. We could do this live. He's got the turn, everybody, by the way, around 5 and 6 picks.
We could do a live pick here when we get to it.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
But yeah, to wrap up Marquez, I think he will be. I think you make a great point with the Healy with like Castillo for last year. Marquez could certainly be that guy, and I might be out on him just because of that Coors Field factor. Like, nobody has been able to pitch well there ever for a sustainable amount of time. So that's tough for me.
That's the part, because this year we thought John Gray would be that guy because what we saw from him, and he might be the worst out of all of their young arms pitching in Coors Field right now, which is crazy.
Even NL West guys that have had built up a large sample at Coors Field, like Clayton Kershaw, I don't have the numbers in front of me. His numbers at Coors are okay, and he's like, you know, the greatest pitcher in the last decade. So,
Well, let's just talk about, like, I'm on the Fantrax player rank, like stats and rankings through the Fantasy Invitational League. Right now, Marquez is the 20th starting pitcher our overall pitcher on Fantrax this season, which is pretty impressive. I don't see him being the 20th pitcher off the board in drafts, but some pitchers around him I want to ask you about. Mike Foltynewicz, compare. Two surprises this year.
Yeah, and Folty's kind of just getting better. I'd probably take Folty over over Marquez.
Now, Jameson Taillon.
I would take Taillon as well.
Last one. Okay, these rankings can't be right, though, because somehow because they rank in wins probably, because Jacob deGrom is 27th. That tells you everything you know right there.
yeah, it depends how many wins, but yeah.
Yeah. For fantasy, I guess that does count, but yeah, Marquez, 20th ranked pitcher, which is pretty darn surprising to me.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get into those two early mocks, we keep hinting at and kind of talking about a little bit. I do want to know how you're doing in the RotoWire Dynasty Invitational. When Ryan joined me in the preseason to kind of break down some fantasy baseball stuff, he just completed his draft. We went over it all. I was a big fan of the idea. That's how I do my Dynasty drafts. Last time I saw it was like a month or so ago. You were doing pretty well. How's that going for you?
Yeah, I want the season to end because I have been sitting in the lead all year. Well, pretty much all year. I probably took over like in mid-May and have pretty much been in first throughout. And it's like every couple weeks, someone else gets within, you know, 5 points of me and then they fall and someone else pops up. So I'm still in first. So the RotoWire Dynasty Invitational, this was a from scratch dynasty that we started last December. 20 teams, standard 5x5. So I've got like 165 points, which is a little bit, you know, misleading for those of you that have used in 12 or 15 team leagues. Points move a lot in a 20 team mixer. So on any given day, you could go up by 5 or 6. So I'm holding on to a 5-point lead right now. Really have had, you know, my strategy going into the draft, which we talked about before the season, was to kind of grab pre-peak guys. My first pick, or guys right, you know, kind of late 20s, 27, 28, guys with a few more years of, you know, of peak left to go. I started with Arenado, JD Martinez, Christian Yelich as a 1-2-3.
That didn't suck.
My first two pitchers. actually, my first pitcher was Garrett Cole in the 6th round. I took Corbin like in the 15th. So I've just hit on a bunch of guys, and that's been good for me. So we'll see. It's like I said, I'm ready for the season to end. I want this thing to be over with and get the title. It's one of the things I tell myself. I don't know if you do this, but I tell myself every year, I'm not going to watch, you know, live scoring refresh and just sit there and look at categories change. But damn, every night I'm looking at this thing and it's, you know,
It's hard not to when you're in the race. That's for sure. Like when you're right there, and you know, people say, "Why do you guys play in these leagues with no money?" And well, there's a lot of pride involved in things like this. That I told somebody actually over the weekend. I said I'd almost rather win most of my non-money drafts because of the people I'm playing against than the money ones I'm in sometimes.
Yeah, this has been. Yeah, I mentioned a few of the, you know, like teams are sprouting up and they'll contend for a few weeks. Beginning part of the season, it was Rob Silver. Then it was James Anderson and Ian Kahn. They co-own a team. Now it's Eddie Almaguer, who's right on my heels. So it's a bunch of industry guys that are kind of nipping at me. So it would be pretty sweet to hoist the trophy in the next 2 weeks. But
and as long as you beat the Welsh. It's all I care about.
Yeah, the Welsh is rebuilding. We'll say that.
Yeah, I remember his strategy wasn't quite the go for it now strategy. He pretty much tanked it out the gate.
It's been interesting. I mean, and the trade deadline was very active in this dynasty. This is, you keep, it's 40 man rosters. You keep 35 forever. So there was a lot of, I don't want to say dump trading, but you know, positioning yourself for 2019. So there was that kind of thing, and I definitely had to make some deals to stay above water. So far, I'm doing that, but lot can change, man.
Yeah, that's the beauty of the dynasty leagues. A lot of different ideas and ways to do things. So that's what I love about it. That's why I wanted to ask you, because I knew I was a big fan of your strategy. I used a similar strategy in a startup. I'm second in it. So I don't think I'm going to take it down like you did, but I do like it a lot. It's definitely a way to do it. All right, let's talk about these two early mocks. For those that don't know and haven't figured it out yet, these are mock drafts for the 2019 fantasy baseball season, even though we are still in 2018. Our buddy Justin Mason over at Friends of Fantasy Benefits and the Sleeper and the Bust puts them together. I believe it's his third year now doing them. The first year was like one or two drafts. Last year, Ryan, I think we had three drafts. And then he'll do a conglomerate article in Fangraphs about it. And this year, Smata has an amazing Google sheets for you to look at already. And I got that pulled up right now. And it runs through league by league, pick by pick, all the industry people, and then an overall ADP putting all eight leagues together. So it's pretty awesome.
And shout out to Smata, by the way, who not only for this, he is the man, not only for the two early mock, but for the TGFBI, the stuff he's put together in Tableau.
Yeah.
Props.
I wish I knew like a tenth of what he does. Like, when it comes to computers, it's honestly a miracle I can put a podcast together, because I am so electronically dumb. I literally have to teach myself stuff by watching like YouTube videos and things. What he can do with these tools is just mind blowing to me.
Absolutely, so, he's got to get scooped up by some fantasy site or something.
Oh, I told Mason that when I saw him for the Barf football draft. No, the baseball draft. Because we kind of saw who Smata was, and I was asking him about him. He's like, "Oh yeah," because Smata started writing for benefits with him, and then I talked to Mason a lot, and I flat out told him when that Tableau thing came out, I told him you better like start paying him as your only paid writer or something, because someone is going to call him up and he's going to be gone.
That's yep, it's a differentiator for sure.
So everybody, what you're hearing right now is he's going to be writing for Baseball HQ in probably like 2 months. Just throwing that. I kid. So we are in League One, even though we started on Friday. What are some of the early takeaways to you? Because, you know, outside of Jose Ramirez going first, which I get, I understand all of it. I just had to ask Brandt about it on Twitter, and it was not picking on his pick. I get it. But Mike Trout not going one always surprises me.
Mike Trout not going one is a surprise. I think next year it's going to be Trout, Betts, Jose Ramirez in some order. I don't disagree with the Jose Ramirez pick number one, if that's your guy. I mean, the guy is pushing to lead the American League in homers and steals and is hitting over 300 over the last 3 years combined. So can you really argue with that overall?
Exactly.
So I think in most leagues, and I'm pulling up Smata sheet as well, Trout went one pretty much everywhere,
yeah,
pretty except much our so league. So.
Yeah,
Trout's my number one, but I think any of those three guys won next year is A-okay.
And then after those top three, it gets really interesting. Like in ours went Lindor, Arenado. I took Arenado at five.
Yep.
They're pretty much tied on ADP. JD Martinez goes sixth. But Trey Turner went seventh. Does that surprise you at all?
It surprises me. Just because I think there are similar comps that you can get a little bit later in the draft. We talked about Mondesi earlier in this pod. Obviously, Mondesi and Trey Turner are two different guys. But like I said, Mondesi has a Trey Turner-type ceiling, and you're going to get him a little bit later. Alex Chamberlain, who's a great Twitter follow as well. I'm not even going to try and pronounce his Twitter handle.
Okay. He threw out something around here.
Dull. Yeah, I'm not even going to try.
Yeah.
He threw out a comp of Trey Turner to Starling Marte, which I thought was kind of spot on. And Marte, I don't know where Marte went in our draft. He went in the third round, 30th overall. So if you can wait a round or two and get Starling Marte, I take him over Turner with that two-round discount. So that was a little bit of a surprise. It's not a bad pick. Trey Turner can, you know, be a complete difference maker with the stolen bases, especially in this environment. So, not a pick I would make, but it's certainly defensible.
No, it definitely is. Like, you see, like, the peak Trey Turner is a game changer for your lineup. It's just we haven't seen the full Trey Turner yet, and that's the question. That was it this year. Coming into this draft season, people were debating taking him third, and some people did. So, and like, the guy that went second most places, I know I had him a lot of places, Jose Altuve, you got him on the turn at number 12. That seems like quite the steal. But the guy I wanted to ask about first before we go to your two picks is at nine, Alex Bregman, and then 10. I was wondering where this man would go. Trevor Story goes 10th overall. Do you believe in that much of a jump for Trevor Story?
It was cool to see Bregman and Story. I'm kind of glad you brought those two guys up because, yeah, those are two new names in the first round, and I think they are going to kind of linger on that back end wheel. I don't know if they'll go 9-10 come next year's draft season, but in 15-team leagues, he might be looking at those guys at 15-16 or 14-17. I like Bregman a little more than Story. And in the early rounds, I just lean more towards the plate skills. I think you get a higher floor, more consistency, more you know, more things can go right when you put the ball in play. And in Bregman's case, have budding power. Story's going to be interesting. I mean, he's the first shortstop to go 30-25 since Hanley Ramirez, I think, in 2008. Oh. He's in a perfect hitting environment. He runs like you know, the counting stat upside is Jose Ramirez-esque, and you're probably getting him 15, 20 picks later. The thing with Story that I worry about, and he's made strides with contact this year, but before 2018, he was pretty brutal at the plate with the strikeouts. Like, I don't think he's anywhere near a 290 hitter, which I think is what he's hitting around right now. You know, the contact, it's somewhat supported by a jump in strikeouts, but it's definitely no given that Story's going to hold this newfound strikeout rate, which isn't great, but it's serviceable for him given the power speed upside. So, in short, I'm probably not taking Story in the first round. I think he's more of like a mid second round type, just because I can see that contact rate dipping back down closer to where it was before 2018.
Yeah, Bregman went ninth in ours. He's averaging about 11.5 ADP. But the Story 10th pick, by far the highest. He's gone anywhere between 10 and 24. His average ADP is about 19 right now, which sits closer to a guy that I kind of was comparing him to before he really busted out in September, I'd say. It didn't surprise me because Javi Baez, I wanted nothing to do with this season. I didn't believe in it. And I still think you look at – if you believe in peripheral stats, which I know most people that pay attention to it do – he's still – there's a lot of things that could regress with Javi Baez. But he's going, you know, a couple picks after Trevor Story on average ADP. He went 14 picks after him in our draft. How do you compare those two?
Yeah, that's a tough comparison. I think Baez has more of a chance to hold a higher batting average than Trevor Story does. Baez hit 270 in the 2 years prior to 2018. And now he's hitting 295, I believe. So he's a free swinger. He's not going to walk. That's him. But the contact's a little bit better than Trevor Story. And yeah, so 2016 he had 273. Then he had 273. Now he's at 295. So I like the batting average floor a little bit more with Baez. He's making a ton of hard contact, but doesn't hit the fly balls like Story does. So I think, you know, stolen bases are probably going to be about the same. I think with Story, you're going to get a little bit more power, lower batting average. In the end, I can see them both kind of mid-second round guys.
One of the fun ones we're getting a lot of, actually similar draft spots, 14th, 15th, 19th, 13th. Someone got him in the 25th pick. And then 13th, Ronald Acuna Jr. After the slow start has just – at one point in the season, it was all Juan Soto, and who is Ronald Acuna Jr.? Now it's almost like he's leaped past Soto, even though I think Soto's still great. But it just seems like whenever you read analysis and even in the draft here, you're getting them almost a full round earlier than Soto. What's your thoughts on Acuna going that early? Because I like Acuna a lot, but like Christian Yelich's going right next to him.
Yeah, and full disclosure, I was not on Acuna entering the season. I was one of the guys who, you know, within the industry who, you know, as Acuna was – as his draft price was getting pushed higher and higher for someone that had never played in the majors before, I wasn't going to take him around the top 100. I was obviously wrong on that. This kid has just been incredible. 25 homers, 14 steals, 296 batting average. If you believe in the skills and they look incredible, I can see Acuna going late first round, early second. I think people are going to take him that high. And I think it's justified. If you get this guy over a full season, he really has not had any problems at all with major league pitching, even as they adjust to him. And Acuna's, you know, last 31 days, he's almost got a 1-to-1 strikeout to walk rate, 18% homer to fly. He's running like crazy. Like, he's not slowing down. Pitchers aren't figuring him out. So I can totally see Acuna going that high. I don't have a problem with it.
As we said earlier, you have the turn, a 12-team league. You had the 12th pick in the first round, first pick in the second, and you went Altuve and Goldschmidt. Is that a usual type of setup for you, or is that something looking at, you know, this year's crop, what you look at?
Yeah, I've always been this way. I'm a boring drafter early on. I love to take
guys. I like stability.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a certain boring that is really good in fantasy baseball, and it served me well in a lot of leagues in a lot of years, is to kind of look at guys who have a track record, who maybe not coming off the best season. Altuve and Goldschmidt both fit that mold. Altuve has been like the number one player, I think, three of the last four seasons before 2018. I don't know if the skills fully supported that run, but sheer regression after a down year this year, I think that's going to make him a first rounder. So I was happy to take Altuve, especially to hopefully get some wheels. I hope he runs a little bit more. I'm not going to sit here and say that he will. I hope that he does, just to get some steals that early. And same with Goldschmidt. I mean, Goldschmidt has been Goldschmidt over the last, you know, ever since May, pretty much. He got off to that awful start that it kind of lasted a little bit too long into the season, but he's fine. And to get him at the, you know, this is a 12-team league, but usually I play 15. So to get him at the back end of the first round, I would totally do that next year. He's had a $30 season, even with that awful start. So I was happy to grab those two.
Yeah, I'm so glad Goldschmidt came here, because all preseason I was like, don't believe the hype. It's like, you know, certain ballparks, when you're just a good hitter, you're a good hitter. Yeah. I've watched AT&T Park ever since it was built. And good hitters, I know Barry Bonds is, you know, steroids, no steroids, whatever you believe in, still a very good hitter, and yeah, it didn't affect him one bit. Goldschmidt is a good hitter. It's not going to bother him. And it just, I don't know if he had something mentally going on or what, but once he broke out of that early season funk like you talked about, he is just crushing baseballs, and he's in the MVP hunt. So
yes, he is. Yep.
Think about there. The way we've seen pitchers kind of get used this year, and the lack of consistency, and, you know, even going into this season, we talked about there was the big four, then there was another tier, and then after that tier, it really dropped into us like a hodgepodge of just this. Like, you're just going to throw darts at it, hope you get three or four that worked for you. And it's been hard to find this year with injuries. Yeah. Max Scherzer went in the first round, eighth overall in our draft, only pitcher in the first round. Chris Sale went in the second round, 15th. We had Jacob deGrom was the third pitcher off the board, late second round at 22 to Donnie Miller. You know, Aaron Nola was the fourth pitcher off the board, then Kluber and Severino. But Nola and deGrom, third and fourth off the board. Any takeaways you're kind of seeing with the pitching in this draft?
Yeah, I think what we're going to have, and you mentioned the big four last year and then a huge kind of 1A tier after that. I think we're going to have a larger 1A tier this year. So I agree with Scherzer at the top. Like, he's a top 10 pick for me. I think Sale still is a number two pitcher as well. Yes, the shoulder is a little bit of an issue, but it's shoulder inflammation. There's nothing structural there. I'm okay with Sale going second. I think DeGrom's the third best pitcher. So I actually have them 1, 2, 3 chalk as well. Kluber and Severino and Cole, I think then you get to a larger tier with Nola. I took at the end of the third, I took Verlander. So the third round, Kershaw went. Yeah, Nola, Kluber, Severino, Cole, and Kershaw, Verlander. I think we're going to see a similar kind of thing in 2019, where everyone's going, or pretty much everybody's going to grab an ace in the first 3 to 4 rounds. And I think that's just a trend that, you know, we've seen. I think And a lot of HQ research has proven this out, that the elite of the elite starting pitchers tend to hold their value more than even like the 1A, tier 1A guys. So I always try and get somebody in that in those first three rounds. And for me, it was Verlander who kind of fell to the end of the third round for me.
Yeah, I liked the way the pitchers fell. You can kind of tell this was more of a quote-unquote expert's draft based on the way things moved, because one that stood out to me a lot, and he was the bottom of the big four for me this year. His back concerns really, really concerned me, and we've seen more than just the back this year. But Kershaw fell all the way to pick 35 right before you took Verlander. Would you have taken Kershaw over Verlander?
I would have. Yep, I would have. I got sniped by our friend Olsmata one pick before me. I would have taken Kershaw. I think Kershaw's going to go
at that point in the draft. I get it.
Yeah. I think just the ceiling with Kershaw, yes, the back's an issue. This has been a bad year for him, but he's as bad year as a 250 ERA. Still throwing 150 innings. If you can get that kind of that production, I mean, in best case, the back holds up and you get vintage Kershaw. I would totally go after Kershaw in the third round.
And then after your Verlander pick, you doubled up on a first base, but you have a corner infielder and Anthony Rizzo. You went Rizzo over the likes of Bellinger. How's that going?
Yeah, I'm a Rizzo fan. I tweeted this out after I took Rizzo. He's one of the most consistent guys. I mean, that's the type of player that I like to get in the first round or in the early in the draft. I took Goldschmidt first pick of the second. So I'm kind of cornering myself there with Rizzo and Goldie.
Literally.
Yes, literally, no pun intended. But yeah, Rizzo. I mean, Rizzo hit 158 in April. No home runs, 6 runs, 6 RBIs in April. Since then, he's been the same exact guy who he's been. So, are we going to really punish Rizzo that much for one bad month when really he's been an upper 20s dollar player in each of the last 5 seasons? So, If Rizzo's going around 40th overall, which is where he went in ours, I will be on him all day.
Yeah, the biggest takeaway early on, I got a couple more thoughts, but you know, I went Arenado 5th overall.
I like that.
I'm a huge Arenado fan.
Yep.
I took Stanton 20th overall. I was kind of debating there. I like Benintendi a lot, but I love that power factor of Stanton that I could grab there because I felt I could get other stuff later on. And the one that surprised me, that was my third round pick, Charlie Blackmon fell to pick 29, and I know he's regressed some this year, but he still has a pretty decent average. He plays in Coors Field. At that price point, he was a first-round pick this year. Am I crazy for thinking that's like really, really great, good value?
No, that was one of my favorite picks, honestly, and I'm not just blowing smoke. Like I've got Blackmon.
I was shocked. I had like double taped. Like, did I miss something here? Why is he still on the waiver? Like, why is he draftable?
Yeah, I mean, even this has been his worst year in 6 years, and he's still hitting .286 with 26 bombs and 12 steals.
Yep.
That's almost a $30 season in his worst year in 6 years. So I still think Blackmon, he would be an option for me early second, even late first round in 15-team leagues. I think Blackmon is going to be fine. He's not going to be the 30 stolen base guy that he was earlier on. But the batting average floor, the home run floor, and he still got some speed. Like, that was a fantastic pick in the third round. I don't think you're going to get that next spring.
No, that's why I was like, okay, can we keep these teams now and play off the season? Because I was too happy with that. Because then I rolled the dice in the fourth round to pick 44 with Noah Syndergaard. I know he's got his injury woes, but a healthy Noah Syndergaard, which is a big if, is disgusting. Yep. And then I rolled the dice on Zach Greinke. That one kind of – it didn't make me feel good, but at that point, I wanted him over Steven Strasburg. So,
yeah, Greinke's been kind of rough in the last 4 or 5 starts, and like you said, Syndergaard's the ultimate high floor guy. I probably would have grabbed Carrasco over Syndergaard.
I think I would have taken it's Trevor Bauer than Carrasco and Walker Buehler. I'd probably rather have Bauer and maybe even Buehler.
So, but again, Syndergaard, if you're playing upside, he could be a top 3 pitcher. So.
Any final takeaways from this? Because the one final takeaway I have is this draft seems even deeper than years past. Like, we're in round 5, and there's still guys that in the recent years we were discussing maybe late second round. It's crazy.
Yeah, so I was just going to say that same thing. Last year, the second round was stacked. So we had Francisco Lindor, we had JD Martinez, we had Jose Ramirez. all those guys in the second round. I think your typical second, third round is going to be stacked again. There's just too much space. Like Freddie Freeman went 18th overall. I think he has first round skills. If you believe in Judge and Stanton and the power and rebounding there, those guys are went 19 and 20. Obviously, you took Stanton. Benintendi could be this year's Yelich. I mean, and he's 21 overall. Then you've got Chris Bryant, who we haven't talked about. He was a first rounder last year. Shoulder brought him down this season. But who's to say an offseason of rest, he doesn't snap back to who he was. Javier Baez went 24th. Like, there's a lot of
Carlos Correa went 26th.
Yep, Carlos Correa went 26th. You took Blackman 29. I talked about Starling Marte earlier. He went 30th. Whit Merrifield went 34, which is probably right for him. Yeah, there's just a lot of talent. And I think, I don't know, and the amount of talent bleeds pretty deep into the pool this year, like 30 plus. So if you can get, you know, a top 4 or 5 pick in a 15-team league next year, you're going to start out with three really damn good guys.
It's going to be loaded, absolutely loated. Like if you're in a 10 to 12 teamer, I'd probably want a back-end pick almost and roll the dice that you get four studs. Yep. Yeah, those like TGFBI next year, if someone says I got like the top four again, I'm going to be very, very happy with life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Ryan, that'll about wrap us up tonight. I'm kind of curious to see where the rest of the mocks go. Any final thoughts? Let everybody know what you got coming up with Baseball HQ.
Yeah, so we are just starting. We're looking at 2019. So we just opened up pre-orders for the 2019 Baseball Forecaster and the Minor League Baseball Analyst. If you have been a regular reader to those, go to our website, baseballhq.com. Check that out. If you order now a recurring order, you'll get that book by Thanksgiving. An electronic version of the book by Thanksgiving, and they'll ship in mid-December. So we are already diving full into book mode for 2019. We've also got First Pitch Arizona coming up in November, which is my favorite weekend of the year. Get to go down and watch some Fall League games and hang with a bunch of industry folks and friends that I've made there over the last few years. It's actually sold out this year for the first time ever. Yeah, it's really grown. One of these years, I'd love to have you down there, man.
Yeah, no, it didn't work out for me this year, but I definitely need to because the Welsh gives me crap every time. He's like, it's an 8-hour drive for you. Why aren't you going? And it's like, it's more than the drive. I got stuff to do.
It's definitely like a 4 or 5 day commitment and some cost there, but it's awesome. So we got that coming up, and then like I said, book season. So got to sweat out these last 2 weeks of the regular season, and then 2019 will be here soon.
Way sooner than we think. But I recommend the Forecaster. I used to have the baseball. I know I got football sitting here right next to me. So the baseball one used to be right by my right hand at all times on my desk. It's a go-to. There's a lot of different books out there. I'm not just saying it because Ryan's on. I've had a lot of Baseball HQ guys on. I've had a lot of guys from a lot of companies on. But I'm a big fan of that Forecaster. It's easy to find what you're looking for. It's got everything you need. So really, really enjoy that. So go check that out. And if you want to ignore your family for the holidays, you get it before Thanksgiving. It's perfect.
Exactly. You have an excuse to kind of slip away, get a glass of bourbon, and get started for next year.
There you go. But everybody, go check him out on Twitter at RyanBHQ. A lot of good stuff they have going over there. And he's always tweeting out these awesome graphs that I don't even want to make those either. Like, there's so many things, you guys, you damn kids these days. So much stuff you guys can figure out. But thanks for joining me tonight, man.
Absolutely, Bubba. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Everybody, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 121. Catch you guys next time.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.